Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. This is the Red America Podcast. Jonathan Cook, and joining me today is the former executive director of the America Rising PAC and press secretary for John Huntsman, as well as most recently the communications director for the Jeb Bush campaign, Tim Miller. Tim, how you doing? Can you hear me? I think we've lost Tim. Tim, can you hear me?
Jonathan.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I don't know why this wasn't letting me activate your mic. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. Sorry about that.
No problem. Thanks for joining me. So we've got a little bit of time today to talk about the future of the Republican Party. I know that you are in the Never Trump camp. How do you think, number one, how do you think we got here? And number two, how do you think we get out of this mess?
You know, you really have to, you know, take the time lapse back quite a ways. And what I like to point people to is go back to the 1992 primary where Pat Buchanan challenged the sitting president, George H.W. Bush. And, you know, at the time, already you could sense a Republican base electorate that was frustrated with elites in Washington, D.C., and that was basically transitioning to a more kind of populist nationalist you know, sort of philosophy. Now, at that time, you know, it was still probably about two-thirds of the party was aligned with President Bush and about a third with Pat Buchanan. But what's happened over the past two decades is, if you imagine two balls rolling down a hill, the kind of establishment Bush ball that was bigger has not added much support over that time, and that ball started to get smaller. Meanwhile, the kind of populist Pat Buchanan, you know, ball has continued to you know, pick up speed and get larger and larger until this year in 2016, where it essentially passed the establishment lane. And if you look at the primary, about 70% of the vote went to Ted Cruz or to Donald Trump. And only about 30% of the vote went to Jeb, Marco, Kasich, and Christie, give or take. So, you know, this is it took a long time for the establishment to lose control of the party, and it's going to take a lot of time to fix it. And, you know, the only way to do it is to grow your slice of the pie and to start bringing new people into the party. And that's something that we've not done successfully in two decades, really, with the exception of George W. Bush, you know, kind of bringing in some Hispanic voters and some young voters around 9/11.
So how do you do that? Is it nominating a candidate like a Marco Rubio or even a Tim Scott who just by their personality can grow the party? How exactly do you do that, do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be tough because this doesn't happen in a vacuum. You know, in the meanwhile, there are going to be forces, particularly in the conservative media, that see the benefit of playing to, you know, voters who are anti-immigrant, who are protectionist. And there are going to be candidates that try to take on that mantle in the future. Now, they're not going to be, God willing, as dangerous and uneducated and crazy as Donald Trump. And hopefully they'll have some foundation in conservative principles, but they're still going to, you know, see the size of the electorate that there and try to take advantage of that. So, you know, from my view, the only way to combat it is to put up a candidate in 2020 that can appeal beyond the GOP party regulars. Is that Tim Scott or Marco Rubio? I don't know. I mean, I like both of those guys. I think that there is, you know, some questions from certainly this past campaign about whether, you know, Rubio has appeal beyond the kind of Republican establishment slice of the electorate. I'd like to think he does. I think that in a general election setting, he'd be doing quite well right now. But it's a different group of people that are voting in a primary. So if it is somebody like Marco or Tim Scott, they're going to have to increase the turnout among, you know, kind of center-right Republicans. It's also possible that there would be a candidate, and this is sort of the white whale right now, but, you know, that's sort of a more mainstream version of Trump, you know, somebody that, you know, would bring in independent voters, but instead of kind of blue-collar, you know, Ross Perot types, they would bring in, you know, college-educated independent voters who are frustrated with how far left the Democrat Party is going. Those voters are there to be had. It's just a question of, are there any candidates out there that can capture that slice of the electorate? We didn't have any this time in the primary. And, you know, I think Jeb wanted to be that candidate, but we were carried by a lot of the, you know, we had a lot of baggage, you know, because of his last name and, you know, a variety of other issues that we weren't able to do it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. In preparation for this podcast, I went back and listened to some of the interviews you had done. I found it interesting, and I know you said it tongue-in-cheek, but you told Eric Bolling on Fox that for once you got to be the principled outsider, he got to be the establishment insider. Are you still having fun in that role change, or are you ready to get back on the inside?
No, I like being the principled outsider. You know, look, but the point I was making to Eric is that it's hard to be the establishment. It's hard to run the country. It's hard to run the party. It's easy to, to spit spitballs at the establishment and to poke holes and to criticize. And you're seeing that right now with Donald Trump. You know, essentially, Eric Bolling and Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Ann Coulter, they are the establishment. Whether they like it or not, however you want to, you know, use that term, you know, we can have a semantic debate. But my point is, they're the ones that are trying to uphold the Republican nominee. And you can see how challenging that is, you know, right now, particularly because the candidate that they're supporting is completely unhinged. But, you know, regardless of what the candidate is, you know, in this environment with such a fractured media, it's a lot easier to poke holes and criticize. You know, back in the old days, in the 80s, you know, Reagan only had to contend with the evil New York Times, right? I mean, he had three nightly news networks, and that was it. And so it was a lot easier to create a message for the whole country that was not nitpicked and picked apart. That's hard now. I don't know whether there will be any reflection from Sean Hannity and Eric Bolling and Laura Ingraham. I suspect that there will not. But they're seeing the challenge right now of trying to be the people that are, you know, promoting a candidate rather than tearing one down. I think that is going to continue to be hard, and, you know, we'll see how the election, you know, what the fallout is in November. You know, if the Trump kind of wing takes over the party for a little while, I'd be happy to be the principled outsider still, because I think it's needed. Then there will be a big fight to try to support Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and try to, you know, create a Republican Party that can actually win national elections going forward. Because, you know, we basically will have gone through a period where we've lost the popular vote in 4 or 5 elections.
Yeah. We don't have a ton of time, so I'm kind of flying through topics here.
Sure.
As I mentioned in the intro, you worked on the Huntsman campaign. I know you worked for McCain. You were in the RNC and Romney's campaign. And now you're with Jeb. You were with Jeb. What are you seeing? Because now you've had enough firsthand experience to know what a good campaign looks like. What are you noticing that's sorely missing from the Trump campaign, just campaign-wise, not necessarily with him personally?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Trump isn't even really running a campaign in the traditional sense of the word. I mean, he did not have a state director in Pennsylvania, one of his most important states, until the summer. As far as the ground game is concerned, Trump is counting on there to be this sort of natural organic groundswell of support for him. That worked for him in the primary because there was. But a general election is a different animal. And, the Hillary Clinton campaign is running a real campaign where they've targeted low propensity Democrat voters. They know who they are, and they're going to go out there and talk to them a number of times between now and the election to try to get them to vote. Donald Trump doesn't know who these, kind of blue-collar whites that did not vote for Mitt Romney, and that he's premising his campaign on being able to turn them out to vote. He doesn't know who they are, though. They haven't done the voter identification necessary. He does not have a team of door knockers and phone bankers to go find them. So that's going to be something that's probably going to cost him, maybe from between 0.5% up to 2% on election day. And then as far as message discipline goes, which is more my area of expertise as a communications director, we don't need to waste that much time on the podcast talking about how he doesn't have any. He doesn't have a message. He's good at getting news. He's very skilled at playing the cable TV networks like a fiddle and creating new chum for them to talk about every day. But he's not good at driving a particular message. And, he has not in this general election been at all consistent in making a critique about Hillary Clinton. And I think that's something that's hurting him.
And you may not want to address this by name, and it's fine if you don't.
Sure.
But you've worked with the RNC. How are Reince Priebus and Sean Spicer and these people, how are they not kind of forcing them to hit the ground and to have effective messaging? Is there nothing that they can do?
I mean, I don't think that there's anything that can be done to control Donald Trump. What needed to be done was back when Jeb jumped out of the race 2 days later, I joined a super PAC, our principles PAC, to help stop Donald Trump. And at the time, a lot of the establishment Republicans, my friends, elected officials, they didn't see much difference between Trump and Cruz. And so they did not get involved. They sat on the sidelines. And we allowed Trump to be the nominee. And throughout that time, myself and some people in the conservative media, a handful of other folks, Katie Packer, were out there saying, look, Donald Trump is going to be a disaster of a general election candidate. You cannot control him. You can't put the smartest people around him and put him into a box. He's a child, and he's going to just emote and say whatever he thinks is going to be able to get him onto the cable news that night. So, I think there are a lot of things to nitpick about what the RNC has done, as Trump, became the leading candidate. I wish they'd push back on him harder. I bet the RNC people would tell you they wish the campaigns were more effective in pushing back on them if they were, being honest about it. But, we are where we are. And so, today, I don't know that there's anything that Reince can do to control this guy. And what my recommendation would be is that they refocus their energies on the Senate and ensuring that we keep control of the Senate, and that can be a check on Hillary Clinton.
So my last question for you is, I find it very interesting reading the timeline of the Bush campaign, the Rubio, and all of this. If Trump loses badly, which I know you think he will, how soon do candidates start jockeying and positioning for the 2020 race, and how soon should people start looking for signs of what's going to happen?
This is very soon. I'm extremely worried about 2020 being a repeat of 2016. I think with the exception of Jeb, I think everybody else could run again. I think that then you've got people like Tom Cotton, who would look to throw their hat in the ring, and we could again have a very crowded field. And so I think that is a deep concern, that we end up having a fragmented field and end up electing somebody or nominating somebody again who's unelectable. So, what I'll be trying to look to do is see, who the strongest candidates are, who the people most likely to be able to win a New Hampshire primary are, and hopefully, you know, we learn our lesson from this cycle and are able to coalesce sooner and quicker around a candidate that actually has a chance to beat Hillary Clinton, because I think she'll be a very weak candidate for re-election in 2020. There's a danger of a replay, and I don't know exactly how to prevent it, except for I think it will be important for those of us who want there to be a nominee that can win to swallow our pride. You know, obviously we got into it with Jeb, we got into a bunch of fights with Marco. If it's Marco, you know, you can count on me to be wearing the Marco T-shirt if I have to. And it's just all everybody needs to swallow their pride and unite behind whatever candidate emerges as the strongest after the early part of the next campaign to prevent, you know, a repeat of 2020 of 2016, where somebody like Trump can become our nominee with 40% of the electorate's support.
Yeah, that's interesting. Thank you for joining me. We are all out of time. I hope to have you on again and maybe talk for a little longer, maybe after the election. Thank you again for your time, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, happy to do it. Thanks, Ben.